gratification. Therefore, a person who gets an object of sense gratification without endeavor should not refuse to accept it. Kardama Muni was not meant for sense gratification, yet he aspired to marry and prayed to the Lord for a suitable wife. This was known to Swayambhuva Manu. He indirectly convinced Kardama Muni, "You desire a suitable wife like my daughter, and she is now present before you. You should not reject the fulfillment of your prayer. You should accept my daughter." Om Aginata Madanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So I'm going to speak about the verse, but to start off with, I'm going to show everybody a picture. If I get the cooperation of Shamarari Prabhu. Or should I start speaking about the verse? Oh, looks like we got it. Okay. Anyway, so I'll start speaking about the verse until he... Nope, there it goes. I'll start telling you about the picture. So what you're about to see is a picture of Srila Prabhupada at the Kumbh Mela in 1977. So in 1977, Prabhupada was already 81 years old. And and you'll see, hopefully if the picture comes up there, that he's not like really in here. You can see that picture. Okay, Prabhupada's sitting there on that chair. He looks like he's chanting and looks like he's kind of experiencing something ecstatic. But it's not like a real comfortable place. I mean, look at that. You know, that's roughing it. You know, it's the Kumbh Mela is an austere situation. Of course, we don't know the temperature. Just from the way, it could be pretty chilly out. It could be warm. I don't know. But in any event, it's just like pretty makeshift arrangement there, Kumbh Mela. You can see the quarters are just like some cloth hung on, poles. And so when I saw that, I thought to myself, man, Prabhupada was no hypocrite. That's for sure. Because in that picture, Prabhupada's 81 years old. It's not 1977. So Prabhupada was born in 1896. Okay? And by that time, you could say, well, what's an 81-year-old man doing in a situation like that? You could say, well, maybe he had no choice. There's a lot of 81-year-old men in India. They have to just, be satisfied with what you got. But Prabhupada had a lot of choice. By 1977, Prabhupada had thousands of disciples. He had hundreds of temples. He could have been, in any one of the temples in luxurious settings with servants, just at his beck and call, right? Just, waiting for him to just... They considered it mercy, please, Prabhupada, ask me to do something for you, So Prabhupada could have been so comfortable, in such nice circumstances. But here he is, at 81 years old, at the Kumbh Mela, kind of accepting the austere conditions of that makeshift situation. And it wasn't like, Prabhupada had to travel from one place to the other because the devotees were, required. No, the devotees were begging Prabhupada because Prabhupada's health by 1977 was already declining. It looks pretty good in that picture, actually. It looks nice and healthy. But, 1977, I don't know exactly when is the Kumbh Mela? What month of the year does it happen? Do you know? I'm not sure. But, by then, 1977, Prabhupada's health was already declining. So devotees were begging him to stay in one place. I mean, I could think of two examples off the top of my head. I know we begged him to stay in New York, and I think that was in 1976. They were begging him to stay. Just, Prabhupada, you don't have to go to Tehran. Just stay here for a while. Because he was experiencing upper respiratory at that time. And they were just begging him, Prabhupada, just stay here. Take it easy. Rest. Stay a couple of weeks, just recover your health. Prabhupada said, that was that famous one where he he banged his dund on the flesh. Just give me the opportunity to die on the battlefield, you know, fight for Krishna, like Arjuna, till the last. Something, I can't remember the exact words, but, you know, and in Hawaii, same thing. They were just saying, Papa, okay, this is nice here. You're in Hawaii. Very comfortable. Stay here. Rest. Recover your health. No, Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was amazing, you know. He could have lived very comfortably, you know, in any one of many different situations, you know, with servants ready to do whatever he wanted. But nope, voluntarily he voluntarily accepted this austerity to, you know, to preach, expand the Krishna conscious movement. And, you know, it was that sort of a consciousness or you know, attitude that Prabhupada had that made it him so powerful. And it was like, there's that expression, purity is the force. So purity is the force. So, because Prabhupada had that purity, he really had that, you know, he was sincere about executing the mission of his spiritual master, and therefore it had potency. And therefore, when he, like what Prabhupada wrote in his books, Prabhupada, you know, just think of this, people would just hear Prabhupada's words and they become devotees. Just on the strength of Prabhupada's words. Either you read it in a book or you heard it. Some people, you heard him give a lecture. But just that's, you know, amazing. You read some words and it touches your heart and your whole worldview, your whole understanding of, you're prepared to change your whole understanding of life. That's amazing, right? And we're going to give everybody one very vivid example of that right now. This is something that I have to give credit where credit. This was sent to me by Navina Nirita, as well as what you're about to hear. This was also sent to me by Navina Nirita. And this is an example of what I was just talking about, because purity is the force, because Prabhupada was so completely sincere and pure and dedicated. His words have tremendous potency and they really can affect people's lives in an amazing way. Hare Krishna. Pretty powerful, huh? Yeah. So, yeah, the power of the potency of the words of a pure devotee. Okay, so that's today's verse. So we're hearing about Kardama Muni. Swayambhu Manu is speaking and he's explaining to Kardama Muni that he's trying to convince him, he's presenting an argument why he should accept his daughter as his wife. And I don't think it's been mentioned. I don't think it's even mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but Swayambhuva Manu and Kardama Muni, if I'm not mistaken, they're brothers. They're brothers. You know, they're both the children of Lord Brahma. Actually, Kardama Muni is older. You know, Gaudachandra, a couple classes, has been showing that picture. makes Swami Bhuvamana look like a real old man, and Karta Muni is just looks like he's only about 13, 14 years old in that picture, but that's not accurate, I don't think. Yeah, he just, you know, to give everybody an idea, you know. But Karta Muni, before this, he was meditating for 10,000 years, and he was one of the mentally generated sons of Lord Brahma, whereas Swami Bhuvamana, I believe, is kind of was like Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma's last attempt. You know, because Lord Brahma is trying to populate the universe and things weren't going that good. You know, they weren't taking off like he had hoped. But then with the appearance of Swayam Bhuvamanu and Saltarupa, things got going. You know, so that was... So actually, Swayam Bhuvamanu is Karta Muni's younger brother. But anyway. So, yeah. And the point he's trying to make is that, he's, you know, Swayam Bhuvamanu's... The argument is takes the form of, you know, it's when something comes of its own accord, it's auspicious, you know. And this is way back in those days, you know. This is happening. This is Satya Yuga, by the way, we're hearing about. And it was auspicious even in those days, what to speak of now. So Swami Bhuvamanu is encouraging him to take advantage of that. So as Chamachandra Prabhu mentioned his class yesterday, we're hearing about an ideal situation. Satya Yuga. This is, took place in the Satya Yuga. And even within the Satya Yuga, this might be the most ideal marriage. This might be the ideal of the ideal. You see? Because, you know, in the Bhagavatam, you're just hearing about, you're getting the topmost examples. So this is taking place in the Satya Yuga. Everybody, Prabhupada said about the Satya Yuga that people were Paramahamsa. They're on the, you know, topmost platform. Paramahamsa is even like pure Shuddha Sattva, right? It's even pure goodness. It's not even mode. But it's at least the mode of goodness. You know, Paramahamsas are at least in the mode of goodness. And possibly even more elevated than that. I can't remember technically, you know. But so this is taking place during that era. And it's being pointed out to by Swayam Bhuvamanu to Karta Muni that, you know, when an offer comes of its own accord, it's very auspicious, you should take advantage of it. Which is sort of saying that, hey, this doesn't happen every day, you know. This doesn't happen every day, so, you know, it's happening to you, so don't be foolish and pass this up, take advantage of it. Okay? So, and that was way back in the Satya Yuga. So the point I would like to make is that this is not the Satya Yuga. It's no longer the Satya Yuga. And what was happening, you know, the ideal things that were going on in the Satya Yuga, we cannot expect them to happen today. And because we're far from the Satya Yuga. This is the Kali Yuga, and as everybody knows, you know, there's the four yugas, Satya Yuga, Dwarpa, it's actually Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, Kali. It's only in this particular round of the ages that the Dwarpa became before Treta. But, you know, it's just like in the seasons. You know what happens in the spring season? Oh, very pleasant. You know, starting to warm up, and the trees are starting to, all the leaves come back on the trees, and there's flowers blooming, and, you know, the air is the freshest, and the summer gets also nice. It's kind of getting warm, but it's pretty nice too. So, and the fall, it's still okay, and but, you know, it's starting to rain a bit, and it's getting chilly, and then the winter, it's like, ugh. You know, like here, even here in Los Angeles, we really don't get four seasons here in California, but I'm from New York, and you get four seasons there, and the winter is cold, rainy, snow sometimes, unpleasant, you know? That's Kali Yuga. So we're living in the Kali Yuga, and we can't expect this type, you know, ideal things to be happening. I'll give you an example, just from my own experience. Kali Yuga, it's mostly influenced by the mode of ignorance, and one characteristic of ignorance is things are kind of like don't make sense. A lot of things happen that just don't make good sense. I'll give you an example of that from my own experience, okay? So I do Sankirtan and we go to schools, colleges, and universities. And so before COVID, all the schools, we got about like at least a couple dozen schools here in the greater metropolitan area of Los Angeles. Whatever school you went to, if you pull in there at about 11 o'clock, you're struggling to find a parking place, right? Remember, just before COVID? Didn't matter which school, any two-year college, any school you went to. You pull in there at 10:30, 11 o'clock, you're struggling to find a parking place. You have to park off the campus, okay? Now, you pull up to any school, and you know it's only like the parking lots are only one-third full at most. It's just so different. So what's going on? Well, during COVID, everything was closed down. But when they opened again, they started offering a lot of online classes because the students, they didn't want to jeopardize their health. So they made that available. And it's become part of the culture because it's easy. A student can get up and stay in his pajamas all day and just take a couple online classes from his bedroom, and that's going to school. You see? So why not? And it's easy for the teachers too, apparently. So you say, well, okay, that's but no big deal. It's a mode of ignorance, but anyway, now here's the crazy thing, that right around that same time, sometime in some cases just before, and in some cases even after, a lot of these schools have embarked upon massive renovations, building new buildings, totally remodeling the whole campus. Right? You've seen that. We've seen that at all. All the two-year colleges must be spending multi-millions of dollars to do that. And then the result, no students. So it's just like, what? What's going on? It's just like, doesn't make any sense at all, but that's Kali Yuga. And that's, as I said, I'm just giving you an example from my experience. I'm sure there's I won't say innumerable, but a lot more examples somebody could give. That's just from my personal experience. I'm going to these college campuses, which I can see were just all newly renovated, and it's obviously they spent multi-millions of dollars putting up new buildings and, changing the whole layout of the campus and everything, and, landscaping and new paths and you name it. It's all new. No students. No students. Well, you can say, well, they're going to come back. Well, let's see. Let's see if they come back, because as everybody's attached to this, easier way of so-called getting educated, just taking the online classes. So it's just like crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But that's Kali Yuga. Things in Kali Yuga just are crazy. It just doesn't make sense. So now, relating that to today's purport, we can't expect, it's the Kali Yuga, we can't expect that there's going to be opportunities where, like even in our society, the Krishna conscious society, okay, we're practicing Krishna consciousness, so therefore, we should just expect that some marriage is going to be arranged for me if I, want to get married. Well, maybe yes, but maybe no. And I'm going out a bit on a limb with this one, but this is an example, but I want to make allude to a principle at the same time. And here's the idea. That's how it was done in Satya Yuga. And even Prabhupada says, I've heard Prabhupada say, even in India, up until 50, 100 years ago, this was still going on to a certain extent among the higher, more cultured people. But, in general, not necessarily. So that's how things happened way in the old days, and it's maybe not how it's happening now. So in the same way, what's more important, getting a wife or a husband, or getting a guru, getting a bona fide spiritual master? Obviously the latter, right? Okay. So how did getting a guru happen in the Satya Yuga? You had to go seek one out. Gurus didn't canvass. See? Gurus didn't canvass in the Satya Yuga. Gurus were someplace, and students who were desirous of spiritual advancement, spiritual elevation, they have to seek out a bona fide spiritual master. But that doesn't happen now, you see? In the same way, that doesn't happen now, in the same way, the arranged marriages by the parents who are consulting the astrology and, all this, can't expect that to happen. Just like you can't expect that, the guru could just sit in one place. Even God himself, Lord Chaitanya gave the instruction, yade deke tade kaha krishna upadesh, amada agyaya guruhana tade edesh. The translation for that is, wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. In this way, become a spiritual master and deliver everybody in the land. Elsewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he gives the instruction, I don't know the Bengali for it, he says, I order every man within this universe to accept the Krishna consciousness movement and spread it. Right? You've heard that one? It's right there in Adi Lila, chapter 9, I believe. So, what to speak of a guru just sitting in one place and waiting for the people to come to him, the candidates to come to him. No. Just 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya is saying, I want everybody. Everybody become a guru? No, forget about some, you know, some one Paramahamsa sitting in one place and everybody's supposed to come to him. No, Lord Chaitanya is ordering everybody become a guru. I order everybody in this universe to accept the Krishna consciousness movement and spread it. You know, he's being very proactive here. And then, what to speak of? And canvas. He's supposed to... we have to analyze these statements. Think about them. Lord Chaitanya is saying, I want everybody in this universe to accept the Krishna consciousness movement and spread it. You know, so is everybody going to be qualified? I'm sure Lord Chaitanya considered that. And he's probably, well, some people are going to be more qualified than others. But it's such a desperate situation. You know, it's such a like a desperate situation. You know, it's so bad that we have to take the risk. You know, some people are going to be maybe not as qualified as others to, you know, preach the Krishna conscious movement. But his instruction is there. So in the same way, and this is true for getting, like, if you're in the, you know, Krishna conscious movement and you're, you know, desiring to get married, if this was the old days, which it's not, you could expect that, okay, here I am, I've come, and some nice arrangement's going to be made for me. Maybe not. I think that we all have to be, not just for getting married, okay, I'm just using that as an example, but for whatever we want in Krishna consciousness, you have to advocate to a certain extent for yourself. There's a proper way to do it, but this is an age of self-advocacy. You have to try for what you want. And I'll give an example, from my own experience of what I mean by that. So my service is book distribution, and when I go out, what I do is I go to a college campus, as I mentioned, university like that, and I put a table down, and you know, in a place where there's a lot of people, supposedly a lot of pedestrian traffic, and so now when I have the table out and I put the books on the table, do I just stand there and wait for people to come to me? Do you do that? Do you just stand there and wait for people to come to you? Do you just stand there? What do? We canvas. We approach them. Because if we were to just stand there and wait for the people to come up to the table, we'd get some. You'd get some. You know, you'd probably... Huh? Yeah. And you see, most of the day, they're just sitting there, or standing there, with talking to each other. Yeah. It's not effective. Yeah, it's not effective. So we probably get about 10% of what, you know, the result that we get. No, we canvas. We approach people. You got to be proactive. That's what you got to do. You see? So, you know, somebody goes, well, that's not appropriate. I mean, you know, you're just invading people's space. And you know, that's what we got to do. You got to do that. You got to, you know, canvas. And you say, what about depending upon Krishna? Why don't you just, you know, be at the table and depend on Krishna? Well, that's the misunderstanding of what it means to depend upon Krishna. You see, Arjuna kind of, he was moving into that misunderstanding. Krishna explained to him, no. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam manushmana yudyascha mayarpitam manobudhir mayavaishasi. Then you'll come to me without fail. So he told Arjuna, yeah, you have to, I want you to depend on me, I definitely want you to think of me in the form of Krishna, but at the same time, perform your prescribed duty of fighting. See, we have to be, we depend on Krishna in that way. If you're a salesperson, you have to think of Krishna, pray to Krishna, but at the same time, sell. If you're a cook, you got to pray to Krishna. You know, you got to chant your 16 rounds and be, you know, pray to the deities. And, you know, please let me do, you know, a good job here. Whatever you're doing, of course, you got to be Krishna conscious. You got to pray to Krishna, but then you have to really try to do that activity properly. If you're doing, you know, property management, right? It's more than just being pure. It's just, you know, you have to chant your rounds and you have to be Krishna conscious and you have to learn also about how to fix something. You know, what's required here? You know, do we have to call somebody in? Can we do this ourselves? You know, there's a certain like amount of skill that's involved. So that has to be there. So once again, practical, this is maybe going out on a limb here, but this is my practical understanding and advice that whatever you want, if you want to be change your social situation, if you want to change your service, if you want to whatever, it's a certain amount of self-advocacy has to be there. Not forgetting Krishna. It's not like, no, both. You try for whatever it is you want to get married or to get unmarried or whatever it is, and then simultaneously you pray to Krishna to help you. It's because it's not Satya Yuga, and we can't expect that, you know, something like what we're hearing about here is going to happen in this day and age. It doesn't even seem to happen among devotee families who have raised their children as devotees. We're not even close, you know, to seeing like I'm sure there's a few. There might be a few within, but generally, I don't see it. You know, that even among devotees, it doesn't kind of work like that. So, it's wonderful to hear about that was the way it was. It's certainly the ideal thing. But in reality, what's emphasized is being Krishna conscious. Shyamachandra sort of touched upon this a little bit, yes, I think. And if I'm incorrect, you can correct me. There's the Vedic way of life and this Krishna consciousness. They're kind of definitely overlapping, significantly overlapping, but they're not necessarily identical. They're not necessarily identical. See, so we would love to be able to do the Vedic principle, the Vedic way of life in every different aspect, but not always possible. So we got to do, but it is possible to be Krishna conscious. See, like Prabhupada, I just was reading last night. I just happened to be listening to a lecture Prabhupada gave at the marriage ceremony of Paramananda, who just recently departed, and Satyabhama. And he made the point that I'm getting my disciples married. He didn't mention about, you know, so they could. He did mention about producing Krishna conscious children, but the first reason he gave is to help them avoid sinful activity. Because he said, you know, and he talked about the regulative principles, one of them, of course, being no illicit sex. And he made the point that you can't make progress in spiritual life if you're engaged in sinful activity. So that was the first reason, and it was like the primary reason Prabhupada gave why he was involved, because he was a sannyasi. Sannyasis don't usually get involved with that. Why, yes, even as a sannyasi, he was involved in arranging and performing marriages for his disciples, because he wanted to help them avoid being engaged in sinful activity, because if they were, then they wouldn't be able to make any advancement in spiritual life. See? So that was, why Prabhupada was doing that. I kind of lost my train of thought. Where was I going with that? Can you? I lost my train of thought now. Could I do that? Anyway, I think I said enough controversial things here, so we can stop there. Does anybody have any question about any of this? Yeah, Shyam Chandra.
Thank you for the nice class, Prabhu. The verse is basically about getting a wife. Manu is trying to convince that, you could get a knife.
You want this one? Take this one.
Yeah, he's talking about getting a nice wife, right? It apparently likes a kind of like a material sense gratificatory thing, what you can get, and especially if you're getting it without endeavor, it's much more, auspicious. And but the other thing is, when you're talking about the spiritual life, right, that's categorically kind of different. It's material and spiritual. And spiritual is something you have to kind of seek out. It doesn't come automatically. You have to like go and actually seek out, and also you have to preach, right? You don't have to wait for it to come back naturally, automatically. But in the Krishna conscious movement, basically, sometimes these kind of tend to overlap, right? Because you have a material desire, but you kind of just smear that, it's not for me, but it's for Krishna. But actually, it's for you, because you're still attached, you're not renounced yet. So that is where, we talk about the principle called Yukta Vairagya, right? you do the things, but you apparently it looks like you want that thing, but in reality, actually, you're renounced. You're not like attached to that. So that's where the purity, the definition of purity comes. The purity of definition means basically how much you're attached to it. You know, you may be still doing some things in the name of Krishna consciousness, but if you're still deeply attached, it's still a material thing. I mean, it's not going to kind of help you. You don't have the same potency or effect when you do the same thing with detachment. So it's kind of, you know, sometimes because people do things saying it's Krishna conscious, but actually deep in the heart, actually you are having that deep sense gratificatory, you know, attachment to the thing what you're doing. It may be apparently something, it looks spiritual, but actually it is, you're not fully detached from that. Just one point.
The Krishna consciousness is obviously the more important thing. I'll just say one last thing. We're out of time. But in the beginning, Prabhupada was arranging marriages. He actually not only was performing them, but he actually arranged marriages. He actually, you know, suggested, well, I think you could be married to this. And then that was right at the beginning. And then the second stage was Prabhupada, some of them dissolved. You know, they didn't last. So Prabhupada, he didn't arrange anymore. You know, but he did still do the marriages. You know, they came to him. We want to be married, Prabhupada. Okay. And Prabhupada did the marriages. That was stage two. And that went on for some time. And then after a while, Prabhupada didn't arrange them, didn't perform them, but he condoned, he sanctioned it. Okay. And I remember there was an instruction that anybody, you know, instruction, any of my disciples can get married, but they have to take responsibility for their own maintenance. You can't expect the temple to maintain you. That was like stage three. And then towards the end, Prabhupada came up with the famous statement, made it in Mayapur. He said, men are good, women are good, together bad. So he said, better just, you know, focus on your Krishna consciousness and don't kind of worry about that too much. That was Prabhupada's kind of like sort of final position on the whole thing, because he could see that what was like a no-brainer for people coming from Indian backgrounds to just be married and, you know, kind of stay married and okay for the rest, that was like a big thing for Westerners, you know. So rather than, you know, push that, he just emphasized just be Krishna conscious. I mean, if you can get it, make it happen, great, but if you can't, whatever, just be Krishna. No matter what happens, be Krishna conscious. Men are good, women are good, together bad. So just be concentrate on becoming more Krishna conscious. So I'll stop there. 8:32. Thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.